I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, it's time for a special edition of Drive to the Close, a double shot, because this guy deserves it. Henry Cornell, founder, senior partner of Cornell Capital, longtime investor, a globally minded guy, and full disclosure, a friend of mine. So happy to have him on the line from Long Island. Henry, how are you?
I am fine, Mr. Kelly. It's very nice to speak with you. I look forward to seeing you live at some point soon.
I know. Well, and also, full disclosure, he has an amazing taste in wine, and he and I have been able to share a glass over the years, glass or maybe more than a glass. But in any case, Henry, first of all, trust your well and your family and all of that, your employees. What's it like running a firm right now?
Well, I can tell you my kids, and I've got five of them, ages 7 to 14, think this is an early summer vacation with just a drop of teleschool thrown in to keep them in line. So, you know, that is an interesting day to day. And then clearly, like many, many people, we are working remotely. And the idea of creating some level of efficiency when you're going call to call to call to call all day long is pretty hard. And then, you know, we have an office in New York and then one in China. And so getting on with our folks over there and just keeping it up, I feel like I should have bought stock in AT&T because we're on the phones all day, every day.
Right.
And Zoom.
And Zoom and BlueJeans and every one of these services.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I'm curious about your thoughts on the economy and what it looks like afterwards, Henry, because I think that's the thing we're trying to figure out. We're hearing about how the airlines are going to have to operate. You know, sporting events, don't expect any kind of big sporting events for a long time. Education, you know, what's your expectations about the U.S. economy, which has proven itself so resilient through so much?
Well, I think I would, you know, key off of your last comment. I am an optimist by nature. I always think of the glass as half empty, but I'm actually genuinely optimistic. This is different than anything I've experienced in my lifetime, from the first oil shock in the early 70s when I was in college to, you know, 87, 91, 97. This is a social, you know, fallout that is just hard to imagine. And I can tell you, when I go to the local supermarket, people are wrapped up like mummies and they're depressed, and it's a bad version of Night of the Living Dead. However, saying that, I was in New York City this weekend because just needed to have a few meetings in person. And when you went to Central Park, spring was in the air, people were out social distancing somewhat appropriately, and I'm hopeful that this year is going to be getting back to what the new normal is, and that I believe next year you will see a real bounce. I think the pent-up demand of people who just want to get back to work, want to get on with their lives and enjoy themselves a bit and be productive, is ingrained in our country, and I think we'll get back there. But this is definitely going to be a huge punch in the nose.
Henry, we've only got about a minute left before we bring you back and continue the conversation. But in that minute, what are your colleagues in China saying?
They say things are recovering. People are going to restaurants. People are actually traveling a bit. Factories are open. We own a number of factories in China, and it was slow getting back up to producing levels. But right now we're actually experiencing, I wouldn't call it a resurgence, capital R, but a resurgence, lower R. And I think the social norms pre-virus will continue to grow there. So I'm taking a little bit of a key off of what's happening in China with how I know things can recover here.
I want to get back to Henry Cornell, founder and senior partner at Cornell Capital, on the phone from Long Island, New York. So, Henry, one thing I wanted to ask you, there's a story in Bloomberg Businessweek magazine this week, and it talks about Wuhan reopening and what's involved, and it talks about use of robots and, you know, meeting rooms that are kept to a capacity of just a handful of people. You don't use elevators, you use stairs. There's a lot of changes. Is that going to be our world as well as we get back to...
I certainly think so for a period of time. I'll give you an example. I flew to Chicago last week to have a meeting that I just didn't want to do over Blue Jeans. And I
or Bloomberg, that's fine.
No, I know there's
that could
a
be a new show.
Jason, you have to teach me how to use it because I'm somewhat technologically inefficient. But we flew and we went to hotel by the airport, and you know, I asked the lady at the desk, and she said, on a good day, we're 7% occupied. And so they gave us the ballroom. I kid you not, and it was for three people on my side and one person. And we literally sat at a table that was 20 by 20, and it was certainly much better than being on the telephone. But I think those types of things, until people feel safe and protocols are in place and hopefully infections go down and vaccinations are arriving, you're just going to see some strange changes. But the interesting thing is how people have innovated during this period of time because they want to get on with their life. And I think that's the important part here. People, there are some who are hiding in their foxholes, but I think people are really trying to figure out how to get on with it. And
right.
I think that's the important thing, which also underscores my own optimism for how we will get back to stasis at some point, hopefully soon.
Well, and as you're demonstrating with that story, Henry, I mean, there are some things, especially in your world, where you are entering into a long-term relationship in private equity. If you're doing a deal with someone, I mean, it's intimate in a lot of ways and important. And as I said, sort of long-term, that requires a certain type of interaction. I mean, you've experienced this over many decades in this business. And I do wonder, you know, what this portends for a business like private equity that is so relationship reliant.
Well, I think every business has a very powerful element of personal relationship. We're not special or different, but clearly, when you're about to commit capital to someone, you want to look them in the eye,
right,
shake their hand, oh my God, and actually have a meal with them and just make sure that you're all on the same karmic wavelength in order to continue to do business together. Because even in the best of times, doing things profitably is hard work. And so I do think people will need to get back there. But I also see the technology that seems to have come to the forefront here will certainly be more in use than it has. I mean, I've used video teleconferencing because it is efficient than flying somewhere for just an hour meeting. But at the end of the day, there's nothing like the personal touch.
Right. I do wonder, in the world of private equity, and you, as you pointed out at the early part of our conversation, Henry, you've seen cycles, you've seen crises, you've seen emerging markets like China in the late 80s, and China and Japan all across Asia in the late 80s, early 90s. You practice a form of private equity, I think it's fair to say, and keep me honest here, that's a little bit different than maybe what we would ascribe to a Blackstone or a KKR. You know, they use a lot of leverage and, you know, $10, $20, $30 billion deals. You're practicing a more sort of bespoke and maybe even sort of pure version to some extent. Where do you see opportunity here for that type of model, whether it's sectors or whether it's specific dislocations in this type of environment?
Well, our firm's strategy has been to effectively invest in U.S. companies and take them to Asia. I lived in Asia for 12 years, from 88 to 2000. A number of my partners are veterans of that era as well. And that is core to us. And the other part is we are genuinely low leverage. In our portfolio, we have no subordinated securities, no mezzanine debt, only senior positions. And before the virus, our average leverage was, you know, 3.8 times. That protects us in an environment like that, and I think the portfolio we have will have opportunities from competitors where we can help do a rescue finance, do a merger, and basically help people get out of this. You know, we're not, shall we say, vulture investors at all. We try to be constructive. We want to protect franchises, and you know, this opportunity, since we are, and I'm knocking on wood as I say this, in a reasonably good position, allows us to actually be very constructive in conversations. And I'll tell you, in the last 3 weeks, phone has been ringing off the hook in a very good way, and we're having lots of conversations, which is why some of those conversations I want in person, so I hopped on a plane last week as opposed to, you know, doing it over the phone.
So you've made investments then over the last couple of weeks as a result?
No, we've made conversations over the last few weeks, and things are in what they call the pipeline. These are very positive things.
What, you know, there are so many industries that Jason and I have been talking about, Henry, about whether it's the restaurant industry, watching very closely, retail, which has been troubled, safe to say, going into this. What's the fallout that you see that will be the result of this?
Carol, that's a really tough one. One of my oldest friends is one of the largest owners of various franchises in the United States, and this is the toughest thing he's ever gone through because you literally have a mandate to shut your business, and how you pay your rent, how you pay the electric bill, which still comes in, and how you maintain your employees is going to be very, very hard. And then, you know, there are articles in the papers today, even some of the great restaurateurs in New York City, like Danny Myers and others like that, they're going to have restaurants that are, for argument's sake, 30% full as opposed to capacity. Those numbers just don't work. And so It's tough. I wish I had a crisp silver bullet response to that, but you know, from hotels to restaurants to any leisure activity, you guys mentioned sporting events. You know, I'm an old Bronx boy, so I've got tickets at Yankee Stadium. I can't wait to get to the stadium, but God knows how many people are going to be allowed in.
Right. Yeah. Well, and or even if we'll see baseball. I mean, I think we're hard pressed to imagine seeing each other, running into each other at Yankee Stadium this year, Henry.
Jason, break my heart.
I know. I'm sorry. Maybe you'll have to get on a plane to Arizona or Florida to see the Yankees.
Arizona's
play.
Been offering up, right? Come on over,
yeah,
teams.
Exactly. All right. Well, look forward to catching up with you again before too long, hopefully in person, hopefully over a glass of wine. Henry Cornell, really appreciate it. Founder and senior partner at Cornell Capital. And as we described, you know, someone
great
who just has truly global experience, you know, for a number of decades and in real time, you know, working with his partners there in China, Carol.
And I got to say, I do appreciate his optimism. Certainly when I see a headline crossing the Bloomberg that talks about California recording 86 COVID-19 deaths since Tuesday, and that is up 6.8%. And that's not what we want to be seeing. We want to see those numbers, certainly the percentage increases, going down.